This is the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
What up, Bankstown? Happy hump day as we are ready to go for the next 3 hours. It's Mr. Marathon Man himself, Nick Sciarra, and me, Joel Blank, as we take you till 4 with sports and a whole lot more as we kick it around with the peeps, as we love you on the box, the boxers, as we talk about sports and things. Boy, not a whole lot of positives to talk about the Astros now either these days.
No.
Last night, so many thoughts, so many things that frustrated me. And then started thinking about the whole ball of wax going, well, at least we got the Rockets. No, we don't have the Rockets. Well, at least the Texans got their stuff. No, they really don't. So now it's like, can they clean the mess up? They're only 2 games under .500. But I'm already done with the Miles Straw experiment.
Well, he's not in the lineup today.
Yeah, you know why?
Because of the symptoms, right?
Same thing as Lance McCullers.
Yeah.
If you got symptoms and you're feeling a little less than 100%, Dusty, sit him down. I don't need to see him misplay another ball in center field. Look, I might be a little unfair on this one. He should have caught the one the other day that cost 3 runs. Last night, they even said he normally plays a little deeper. He wasn't playing deep. The ball went over his head. It was a game changer. It literally changed everything. And if he's the guy that's supposed to be the defensive outfielder, and that's why you're supposed to be okay with the fact that he struggles at the plate, he hasn't even done that.
The last thing I need is him not doing well on defense if he's not going to have good plate appearances. Yes. And you're right. That was such a big game changer. And look, CJ Cron went off and he had another home run after the fact. So even if you call that a little bit of luck, it doesn't matter. The guy still played well. And Miles Straw missing. That's just their defense honestly didn't look that good. Outside that little play that Maldonado made in the first inning, throwing it to second, honestly, the defense looked pretty much sloppy for the remainder of the game at that point. I mean, you even saw the one where it was basically a blooper hit. No one was covering second. It was basically a fly ball that fell in center field. No one was covering second. And it was just a bad defensive play. So the last thing I want to see is Miles Straw playing poorly on defense if he's going to suck at the plate.
And so here's the memo to James Click. You thought, because of what you saw on paper, you thought because of the veterans you were bringing back, you thought because of the way the young arms pitched last year, you didn't have to do a whole lot, and this team was supposed to be in a good position. You also thought, because of the way that the division looked, you should also still be in first place in said division, have a place in the postseason, and then plan accordingly between now and the trade deadline if you have to tweak some things or add a guy here or there. Now, totally different philosophy. You have to be absorbing all of this going, my bullpen sucks. I need at least one more outfielder. I have to realize that both of my catchers can't hit, but what I can't do is leave the last 2 to 3 spots in the lineup as just offers every night and expect to keep winning games, especially with an offense because of COVID now that hasn't been able to be productive. And as a manager, Dusty Baker's got to be better too. Because in the 7th inning, in a key situation, when you have a guy on and you can pinch hit, I don't want to see Toro. I want to see Yordan. All he's got to do is get a ball elevated, even if it's cold, in Denver, and I'll take my chances with him instead of Toro and needing an extra base hit. I don't know what he was thinking there. I think he went to the bullpen too soon again last night, and I think that as much as he was beloved in the run that they went on last year, I don't know what he's been doing this year, but he's got to be better.
Yeah. No, he does. He does. And that's why it was frustrating to hear after the fact that, you know, they were considering not playing Miles Straw. The guy, a lot of people just think he should be benched or he's simply a backup, and I understand that. But what did you think of Luis Garcia? I felt like he did okay.
Great.
I thought he did okay. I mean, he didn't ruin the game for the Astros, in my opinion. It was just some of the sloppy play on defense, I felt like, that ruined everything for the Astros. So, if you're looking for a positive, I guess there's one for you. But
I like what he brings to the table. The quirky delivery also throws people off, but he was really changing speeds. He started to lose it, but it was natural because he's not completely stretched out yet. He was getting up into the 80s with his pitch count. But at the same time, he still had guys chasing. Think about the amount of check swings that weren't called strikes that were borderline. He had guys guessing all night long. I would have taken my chances with him rather than Abreu, especially because here's a guy in 30-some degree weather pitching in short sleeves, and he was adjusted. He was dialed in. That wasn't going to bother him. Abreu, from the minute he got out onto the field, he's blowing on his hand. He's shaking his arm. I'm like, oh, man, this dude, he's already mentally thinking he doesn't have what he normally has, and he's probably going to groove one. And sure enough, he did. And like we said, it changed the entire complexion of the game. I loved what Garcia brought to the table. I like the fact that there's a lot of good positives to think about as this guy. Again, he got tagged with those two of those earned runs he probably shouldn't have had. And he gave you a quality start. He got you where you needed to go from a starter's position, which has been difficult. So you add him to the fact that Javier is a guy coming back, that Greinke has been solid. Yeah. There's three right there. Now, if Fromber can come back or McCullers can find it, as he's going to pitch against the Angels on the homestand, having missed last night's start, now you shuffle the pitchers a little bit, but the starters become better. That doesn't address the fact that your bullpen is garbage.
Yeah, and I'm pretty sure they're well aware of that. They're going to have to do that. Not completely over. Like you said, they're just a game below 500, so it's not completely over. But, man, I want them to turn things around because there's nothing positive in the Deshaun Watson situation, the Texans situation, and certainly your Houston Rockets. Just not a good situation at all. So I really want to see this Astros team pick it up. And honestly, I thought they had a chance to win that game, Joel. That was a completely winnable game. And I don't know why, when I saw that RBI double by Correa, I'm like, you know what? They got a chance to win this game. It just went downhill from that unfortunate situation. But yeah, they definitely need some. Hopefully, Fromber can come back because that would be great for the Houston Astros. You know,
but this is on James Click at this point. Because the other thing is, Nick, look, I think I can answer for you, but I'll let you answer it. But who would you rather have, Jake Marisnyk or Miles Straw?
Yeah, it's pretty easy. And Marisnyk, obviously. It's just, it sucks. And I hate doing that to Miles, but it's the truth.
But the main reason is, Nick, you want a guy that if you're going to be known as a defensive outfielder that plays defense. Jake Marisnyk, you never had a doubt. When a ball was hit his way, he's going to have a shot at it. He might not get every one, but he's going to have a shot at it, and he's going to play it the right way. We've already talked about two incidents in the past, four games, where Miles Straw was less than a defensive outfielder. He was an offensive outfielder because it was offensive to see how he played the Odorizzi fly ball that cost us three runs, and then last night.
And he's faster than Jake. He was faster, so I don't understand why he's not making these plays other than he's not on the right spot, not in the right position at the right time. And you mentioned that. You alluded to that. He normally plays deeper, so I don't know how much of an excuse that is, but God, it's just tough to watch that guy play right now.
And
hopefully
that's why
he turns
saying,
things around.
If I'm James Click, I'm talking to other teams right now. I'm talking to teams with a surplus of outfielders. I've mentioned names in the past from Kevin Kiermaier, a guy he's very familiar with from his days in Tampa, being James Click, and looking at that, Gerchuk in Toronto when George Springer comes back. Guys that you can obtain, you probably have to absorb more in terms of salary than giving anything up, and they can help you immediately. Because Miles Straw right now either is your pinch runner or he belongs in the minor leagues. And until he figures it out, both offensively and defensively, he has no business being in the lineup as a starter in Major League Baseball, let alone, Nick, the other thing that really ticked me off last night is he batted him leadoff. I don't need Miles Straw, who's almost a guaranteed Shipley's or Duncan donut because he's going to go over. I don't need him in the one slot. I'll take him at nine and take my chances as a secondary leadoff hitter in case he walks or gets on. But I don't need him getting five at-bats a game to do what he's been doing at the plate.
I guess he just likes the speed so much to the point where he wants to put him there. That's my only guess. He's alluded to it before in the past. I guess if that speed is something you like that much, I guess that's where you put him. Now, where's your thoughts on the whole Maldonado extension?
Martin Maldonado?
Uh-huh.
I mean, look, I think from the standpoint of being a guy that the clubhouse likes, there's a guy that you know what you're going to get defensively. Because he handles the pitching staff really well. They call him the machete for a reason because he cuts down runners. Offensively, the biggest thing that I've had an issue with is, and whether it's the hitting coach or him himself personally, you got to take more pride in your bat. I think that, you know, ever since he's been an Astro, it's just like, hey, whatever he gives us offensively, that occasional home run or extra base hit, you tip your cap and you take it. No, I think if you worked at it a little bit more, I think you could adjust your stance a little bit more, you shorten your swing up a little bit more, he could be more effective. But in terms of what he brings on a nightly basis behind the plate, especially with a young pitching staff and being bilingual and being able to communicate in key situations, all those kind of things, I think I'm fine with it. I think I'm fine with him being a member of this club.
I just asked you because Dell was asking me. He didn't understand why they wouldn't explore other options. Why is Maldonado necessary? And look, it's an opinion. I just wanted to throw that out there. But, yeah, I guess, look, for one thing that really helps his cause is the fact that pitchers like to throw to him. So
yeah, I would say, Nick, the only thing I would do to combat what his shortcomings are is it would be more on Jason Castro. Instead of getting another guy that's just like him, that anything you get offensively is a big bonus and that he's been a better than average receiver behind the plate, I would look to a guy as your backup catcher that brings a better bat to the table.
Yeah.
So but again, that shouldn't be James Click's focus. James Click's focus should be bullpen and an outfielder that can play every day, that can give you what you need, and then a Dusty Baker. My top three criticisms right now are exactly that. Miles Straw sucks, the bullpen sucks, and Dusty Baker's decision-making sucks.
Yeah, I don't know if he's one of those old school in the sense that he doesn't veer away from changing his mind. Like, he doesn't change his mind too much. If he has the mentality, he kind of sticks to it, so... But, yeah, there's your little Astros update. There's a lot to talk about. Yep. I mean, there's NFL news. Antonio Brown got his settlement, but Deshaun Watson didn't. So we can talk about that. We can talk about the Rockets. We can talk about your boy Maxwell. There's so much to talk about.
And brace yourselves, kids, because I finally got in contact with him through his PR person.
PR, huh?
Yeah. I guess Max is blowing
nice.
Up. I mean, he's come a long way from the fact that Tad Brown insisted that I make a breakfast.
You don't talk to me, Joel. You talk to my guy.
Yeah, but they were on the golf course today. We had a little chat. I'm going to get Vernon on the show in the near future. That's going to be great. We're going to have to let him know. Unlike the audio that I uncovered from a podcast, he's not going to be able to drop MFs whenever he feels
Why?
Like it.
Why can't we do that? Can we do like an app-only interview with Vernon Maxwell? That way he can say whatever
Twitch.
The hell he wants.
Maybe we just interview him during breaks on Twitch.
Not
so that
mad
he can
at that.
Fly.
Not mad at that.
But at least he's going to be joining us, so that'll be great to catch up with my man VMAX at some point in the next couple of shows. So we're going to do that. But yeah, lots of opportunities for you guys to join the program, lots of topics to discuss, and it always starts with what's on your mind that you want to get off your chest. So whether you do it on Twitch or Twitter, or you do it via the HR&P listener line, it's 713-780-3776 for calls and texts. Otherwise, you can hit us on Twitch, as we're already interacting. You can hit us on Twitter, where it's at @TheProducerNick, at @PacManJoel with a K. We're here for you. We're having a good time. It's just getting started. So fasten your seatbelts, and away we go. It's the Press Box on ESPN. Right now, I want to tell you about the good people at Fitz Roofing. Look, I know that a lot of you guys had storm damage. I know last week up north, there was hail damage. And you're wondering, what can I do if I go through this? And how can I save money? Well, the first way you can do it is by calling Fitz Roofing. It's 832-521-3001. And the reason why you call them is because they do free, no-obligation inspections. They come to you. They tell you what they can do. It's not just for roofs either. They can do it because you need some construction work done in your attic. You need a new fence in the backyard. It got knocked down. They do home repairs as well. They have so many different extensions. And the good thing is they can give you estimates without it costing you a dime. And they come to you and tell you what they can do. All you do is pick up the phone, 832-521-3001. Reach out to them, and they're going to take care of you. You can also check fitzroofing.com. But Corey and his staff, they're A1, top-notch. Corey's the vice president of Houston Roofers Association. That means that he is trusted, respected, and has a reputation. That's what you want. You don't want shady or sketchy people taking your money up front and not doing great work. They do fantastic work every step of the way. Check them out today, fitzroofing.com, or call them, 832-521-3001. Fitz Roofing, making a difference, one home at a time.
You going to answer that?
To call into the HR&P listener line, dial 713-780-ESPN. The Affordable Care Act continues to be a complex regulation, and employers must comply. Visit HRP.net for help. You're listening to The Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
All right. not Santa, who's always not nice.
Why?
Had to throw in the whole, technically, he was one out away from a quality start. Well, Santa, yes, you are correct in that, but let me be very clear in why I'm correct. Because based on the starts they've been getting by everybody not named Zach Greinke, that was a quality start for your Houston Astros. So therefore, he did his job, and that's exactly what I said, and that's what I meant.
So that's why he was being mean, because he said that?
Because he tried to... Everybody that tries to be teacher correcting student.
You know how not saying it. He likes the dynamo and the dash.
He's a big football guy.
Football.
And I guess soccer matters isn't enough for him. And I appreciate him listening. I just don't appreciate always having to be reporting to the teacher's office when he wants to correct.
Suck it, not Santa.
I didn't say that, you did.
I thought that's what... From your vibe, I felt like that's what you were trying to tell not Santa. But that's my bad. I misinterpreted that. You can leave a bunch of things up for interpretation, like the Las Vegas Raiders tweet yesterday.
Now, we can get into that, absolutely. Because here's another situation where after the show yesterday, the George Floyd verdicts came down, Derek Chauvin guilty on all three of the charges, waiting for the sentencing stage, which is 2 months from now, when we find out how many years he will get. But in the meantime, everybody reacting, the sports world and otherwise, everyone had an opinion, everyone voicing it. In some cases, a lot of people putting it on social media. The Vegas Raiders decided to do so in a way that stirred up so many emotions from so many people. And I think that, again, I'm not trying to tell you which way to go politically. I'm not trying to make this political. But I think that you guys need some context, okay? Because the Raiders put out a tweet that says, I can breathe, and yesterday's date. Now, there are a lot of people that were out there that were trying to guess as to why that would be offensive. George Floyd's brother himself said after the verdict, for one day we can breathe, or something to that.
You're paraphrasing.
But it was something like that. But here's the understanding you need. In December of 2014, on the heels of the death of Eric Garner, there were a lot of athletes wearing T-shirts and outspoken, and a lot of people jumping on the bandwagon as well to use the phrase, I can't breathe. That's where it started. To retaliate against that, there were police groups and other groups that were using T-shirts and signs that said, I can breathe. That's why it's offensive. So the fact that it was up, that many people called them out, and that they had the chance to take it down, and not only did they not take it down, but they doubled down by having, was it Mark Davis?
Mark Davis, Al Davis's son,
saying he did it. He didn't mean any disrespect by it, but he wasn't taking it down. You have that, and they have that to deal with.
I'm not going to lie to you, and I was trying to say this on the last show. I did. I was like, look, you can look at it. I think some people can look at that and say, you know what, he was just trying to tweet as a sigh of relief. But the timing of it is super questionable, and I think that's the reason why. Now, I don't know if they've since deleted that tweet, but it was up for quite a long time, long after the fact. So I haven't gone back to check on it. But look, Mark Davis puts his name on it, and that's fine. The thing that I mentioned too, Joel, is – If the owner is the one that's taking claim and he's the one who initiated this tweet, I said there might be listeners out there, Joel, that might be like, you know what? That's the owner. What he says goes. I would be worried about losing my job in a situation like that. I actually wouldn't, because I feel like you can approach that situation and say, you know what? Look, if this is what you really want to tweet, Mark Davis, there's no problem. I would encourage you not, because we don't know if people are going to interpret this the wrong way. You know what I mean? We don't know how people. So maybe I feel like even if I am not high on the toting pole, I could probably go up to Mark Davis and say, you know what? Look, I'll do it if you want me to, but I don't know if we should do this. I wouldn't be in fear of losing my job for making such a suggestion. If he insisted and he wanted to do it, that's his choice. That's his business. He runs it the way he wants, you know? But the timing of it is certainly questionable. I did look at it as, okay, he was trying to kind of endear himself. But sometimes when you try too hard and you try to endear yourself too much, you end up looking bad. Pelosi is another example. We were talking about that as well. I mean, you can't thank people for dying. That's just dumb. So, yeah.
So here's the thing, Nick, on that, and I again bring up my good friend Chad that lost his job because when the Rockets were about to put the Mavs out of the playoffs,
I remember,
and he posted the emojis of the horse head and the gun.
Yep.
And with Les Alexander owning the team and his beliefs in animal rights, it got him let go. He checked with some of his supervisors, but the owner didn't sign off. The owner didn't know it was coming. I don't think the CEO did either. I think in this case, you have job security when your owner either knows the guy in advance and is protecting him or truly was the one that was. Because here's the key. If the organization is working like a well-oiled machine, especially with something that has this big of a deal with this magnitude whenever every team, because we saw the news was full of the Rockets put this out last night. The Minnesota Timberwolves put this out last night.
Oh, yeah.
So all the sports tweets were relevant. The fact that when you put out what you did and realized this wasn't just a sports tweet, this was a big time national and international tweet. I would hope that if it was the case, he was involved in the communication internally. He was involved in the sign-off process, and he took ownership in it because he is the owner. That's one thing. If he's covering for his person, that's another, because now the person at least says, hey, I don't have to look over my back every time I press send on a tweet for the organization because I know he's covering for me and he's got my back. I don't know how it all went down.
I thought about that, too. I thought about him potentially covering. But the reality is, if he really was covering for somebody, why would he allow him to leave the tweet up for that long? You know?
Yeah, I think that, look, good for him for protecting his employees one way or the other.
If that's the case.
If it's the case. Or if that's him just taking a stand, this is what we always talk about, is surrounding yourself with really intelligent people. We talked about it with Deshaun, whether it be his agent and their people, in terms of scrubbing his
Michael
Twitter,
Jordan hiring the right people.
Correct. Or, you know, what you should and shouldn't direct message and or put in electronic writing. Those kind of people. In an organization, it's the same way. I can't tell you how many meetings I was involved in over my almost 30 years in professional sports where the CEO and or the owner and or the department heads for each of the different departments, me being broadcasting, someone else in marketing, and someone else in PR, and saying, hey, this is what we're thinking about doing. Let's hash it out on the table right now before we do it. Pros, cons, what's the possible reactions that we're going to get, any kind of backlash, and then we'll decide whether it's the right move to make or not. If you do it that way, more times than not, you're going to end up being successful.
Right.
If you just let someone that you've hired for whatever the salary is running your social media run amok and do whatever they want, you're going to get burned.
No. What a lot of companies do, Joel, too, is like, because obviously in a lot of dynamics, there might be multiple people. Actually, in a lot of times, there's multiple people with these social media accounts password, right? So I see a lot of platforms and companies, what they'll do is they'll just change that password once a year, once every 6 months, just in case someone has access to their Twitter or their social media, or their Instagram that they don't want. So they always change it because that's how much attention they pay to their social media accounts. It's a department. It's its own self. Like, you have to pay super amount of attention when it comes out to social media, because once you're on, when you own a team, you have to include that. There's no way you can own an NFL team or an NBA team and not have social media. So I see a lot of companies, what they'll do is they'll just change the company password or the Twitter password or the Instagram password quite a bit, just to make sure no one gets this password that shouldn't get that password, you know?
See, and we get, again, just like everything else, you get conflicting opinions, right?
Oh, yeah.
But the fact that you can't just ignore that, you can't ignore it, especially when it's put out there in big, bold letters from a professional sports team in the NFL, it deserves attention. And whether you get the crowd that says, no, he was just basically repeating what was said by George Floyd's brother yesterday, or you get the people that say, no, that's not appropriate because of the fact, as I referenced, that it was used after the death of Eric Garner,
yeah,
that you can have both sides of the equation. But the thing is, it's getting attention. It's out there, and you face the possibility, at least, of backlash. And as an organization, that's the last thing you want to do. You don't want people taking sides either way against you. They can take sides on their own time, but you don't want it to be because of you.
Yeah, no, 100%. You know, when I first saw the tweet, you know who I thought of would do something like that? Kyle McNair.
Oh, for sure.
Kyle McNair strikes me as the guy that would go up to somebody and say, "This is really clever. Let's tweet this out. This is really clever." He seems like a guy. I didn't expect it from Davis, but in any case, it is what it is. They put it out there. And
Well, here's the thing. I mean, to your point, Nick, I mean, when you look at this and you think about the Texans, they never replaced Amy. So the fact is, now there's less people involved that can make a sensible decision so that they don't look bad. So what happens with press conferences with Cal, with everything that the Texans normally touch lately, from Jack Easterby to otherwise, it's bad. It's not good. You want all good out of your social media. You don't want to get, you use that as an avenue to get more fans in. You don't want it to push more fans away. And that's what they've been doing.
No question.
That's what this is for the Raiders, whether you like it or not, agree with it or not, or see exactly what they were meaning by it or not. Again, because it wasn't clarified, and we can't tell tone within the text of a social media post, and it was just that one phrase. It didn't say, "We say this because we believe what George Floyd's family believes today." It didn't have any backing to it. It was just.
It didn't have any clarity. And when it becomes ambiguous and you leave it open for interpretation, then you need to clarify. And that's what they didn't do.
Right. Exactly. So we're getting it going. We're rolling with it. I'm getting all your comments in. I'm not taking offense by it. If you guys agree with it, fine. If you don't, fine. I mean, there's someone that said everybody's too sensitive nowadays. Who gives an F about a tweet? I hate people. Well, that's your prerogative. But we're here for you to have a platform to voice it so we can discuss it. That's what we're going to continue to do. So if you guys want to join the program, we're here for you. Tweet, text, call, whatever the case may be. We're going to be here for you. Before we go to the break, I want to tell you about the good people at Apollo Men's Health. I've been telling you about them for quite a while, and I'm going to tell you about them for a lot while longer than this, because they can get you feeling great again. You don't feel like you were in your 20s all the time, but you can feel it more consistently. From the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, Apollo Men's Health can have you feeling great again and feeling like you probably thought you never could feel like anymore. It's because they take the time to listen, and they're smart people that are educated to form a plan so that you can get where you need to go. They have two locations near downtown Houston in Pearland and Lake Jackson to better suit you. Dr. O used to work at the other clinics. He knew what worked. He knew what didn't. And he bought his own places and started his own places so that he can just get you to where you need to go faster without the stuff that didn't work. It's simply a place where people care about you. And that's important these days. So if you're honest with them when they ask you tough questions, they're going to give you answers. They're going to find a program, and they're going to get you on it quickly. Men and women, too, because they have hormone therapy for women just like they do the men. If you want a full body composition analysis when you're starting on a workout program, they can do that. HGH peptide therapy gets rid of some of that joint soreness and some of the things you go through. But simply put, they take care of you every step of the way. So from the boardroom to the weight room to the bedroom, get some help from the good people at Apollo Men's Health. It starts with making that first appointment, and it's very simple to do. Go to apollomh.com. And you'll find out that most major insurance is accepted, discounts for military personnel and first responders. Or you can call them, 832-664-9966. Either way, you mention my name, free B12 shot on your first visit, and they'll get you feeling good in no time at all. Check them out today. It's the good people at Apollo Men's Health.
ESPN 97.5.
Electric word life will mean forever, and that's a mighty long time. But I'm here to tell you, there's something else. The afterlife. So when you call up that shrink in Beverly Hills, you know the one who wants Dr. Evan to be all right.
On ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy. Affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
Back playing the Purple Man. Nick and I were just talking about it during the break. And by the way, we should probably just play Prince music the entire 3 hours, and I'd be fine with that because you know I'm a massive fan.
I know. I can't believe it's been 5 years. It felt like he passed away 2 years ago, man.
5 years ago today, Prince passed away and was a shocker. Just a musical genius in so many different ways. I know that Reels, you know, my favorite documentary channel. has autopsy prints, and they have some of the background story on Prince going on right now. But gone too soon, an amazing talent. Someone tweeted it was phenomenal. It was like he could wear a dress and steal your girl.
That's so true.
He could grab a guitar and steal your show. He could wear a blouse and beat you in basketball. He did so many things. He could wear heels and take your woman. I mean, that's who Prince was. And it just made, I told you this, he did these things where it was almost like what we would call like a pop-up shop now or a pop-up concert.
Yeah.
And he did one at Hoffine's before they redid it. And it was a late night show. So we were actually, after a Rockets game, we knew it was coming. Someone slid us some tickets because they knew we weren't going to be able to stand in line. And someone at U of H said, do you want to go?
Like, yeah.
And boy, was I glad I went, because I think he went for 3 hours and it was just a massive jam, and just all of his different talents and all the stories we've heard. He was just a genius in so many ways, and it just doesn't seem, you're right, it doesn't seem like it was 5 years ago.
Also, you've told me that Hoffine story before. I mean, that's probably deep in your memory banks, because you never forget that.
Right.
And if you think about Prince as a Houstonian, you would think, all right, where is he going to play? What venue would he perform in? You wouldn't necessarily think Hoffine's, would you? I mean, obviously, Hoffine's was considered a much bigger venue back in the day before it got really old, but still. Like, every time I think about Prince performing in Hoffine's, you know, that's just crazy to me, you know?
Yeah, and you know what? And some of the other stories, like the fact that he was a massive basketball fan. I know everybody goes to the whole Chappelle show and the game blouses.
Yeah.
But that was based on a true story, that they played pickup ball. And I told you the story. I was watching a Bucks game the one night. Marcus Johnson does color analyst work on TV for the Bucks, former Bucks great. That's up for the induction for the Hall of Fame. And he was telling the story about being in Indianapolis in the hotel, and all of a sudden the doors open up on the elevator and Prince walks in. And he's in awe.
Yeah.
But he realizes Prince is actually in awe and wanting to talk to him. And the next thing you know, he gives them tickets to their show, and they go to the show. And the next night he's sitting courtside and he's talking nothing but hoops, and he's a massive fan. And it's like,
you get excited when you talk about Prince.
God.
I don't blame you, though, man. You absolutely love Prince. It's unreal. You get, like, all giddy.
And I've told you this. And my sister and I were having this conversation via, text about a week or two ago, because she was bringing up memories about, like, my dad and his different variations in music and how it kind of had an effect on us.
Yeah.
And she's like, are you doing that with the girls? And I'm like, funny you should say that. But I'm like, I actually have reservations because of how I think Lisa might react, or her mom, like when her mom comes to visit. But when we're in the car, it's almost like a music lesson. So I will teach her about Justin Timberlake. I will teach her about some of the current bands. But then we'll go back one time and I'll see what she likes. I'll leave it up to her, because the next time in the car, I'll say, what do you like? Well, I started her on Prince. And the first song on one of the first albums is Controversy. So I've told you this, that between that and the Let's Go Crazy that you were just playing, she would go into the house and then start singing it. Well, there are certain lines in certain Prince songs that I'm like, don't say that in front of your mom. But when, you know, am I straight or am I gay in Controversy?
Right.
Is one that I go, oh, Lisa might have a problem with that.
Yeah.
But we're going to let it go.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Let's Go Crazy, when she's singing it and she goes, is all I heard. I'm like, yeah, he got a boo-boo and he was wondering if his leg was okay, so he was stretching it out. Because I don't want, you know, I don't need to for her to not learn about Prince, because Lisa's like, yeah, a little too seductive on the lyrics.
Well, I can see where the concern comes from, for sure. BC wants to get on this Prince pop-up
BC,
show.
BC, what it do?
Hey, good afternoon, guys. How y'all doing?
Good. How you doing?
Doing all right, man. Doing all right. So I was in fourth or fifth grade, and my dad comes by to the elementary school and pulls me, like, right before lunch.
Yep.
And we're in the car, and he's like, hey, I'm taking in my work. I was like, okay. He goes, you might not appreciate this right now, but you'll talk about it later in life. I was like, okay, cool. What's up? Well, he was a speech pathologist for Goose Creek ISD. He worked with deaf children and autistic children. And Prince did a pop-up concert at that auditorium with, like, 48-hour notice.
Yep.
He's probably even less than that. So it was an auditorium with, you know, maybe about 60 or 70 of the kids and of the faculty. And he did about two and a half hour set. And he played, like, seven or eight different instruments. And he sang, yes. And it was crazy.
Yep.
And my dad's exactly right. To this day, I still tell that story, even though at the time, I did not appreciate the experience and the intimacy of the setting watching him perform. But he was incredible.
No doubt. Appreciate the call, BC. Yeah, that's the kind of thing I was talking about. The other thing was, he was a stickler. He was a perfectionist.
Yeah. So we've talked about this a lot.
Yeah, the people in the band were worried if he was missing notes.
He'll let you know.
He'll let you know, and he might hold your paycheck back a little bit if he feels like you were underperforming.
I remember that was brought up after his death, yes, right? That wasn't brought up before his death. That was brought up after his death.
Then there's a really good interview that he did on BET, and the guy that was doing the questions was like trying to do what a lot of us that are big connoisseurs of all the albums would do, which is let's not stick with the mainstream songs. Let's go to songs that had a cult following, like Erotic City. Like when we introduced you to, for a lot of reasons, including your name being in the title, but Darling Nikki.
Right.
And we're like, that's a song that you won't hear on the radio, but that's a great song. And the guy said, you know what? I got a problem with you. He's like, I don't understand. He goes, I go to a concert, especially when you're playing for 2-3 hours. I need to hear Erotic City. I need to hear Darling Nikki. And just the way Prince was, he gives you that little smirk. And he was like, I'm very conscious of my audience. And as my audience got younger, I had to be more selective with the songs that I played. And therefore, I made the decision. You don't hear Erotic City when a young person can hear that and have the wrong thoughts go through their head. And it was just like, oh my God, dude is like, and
you just
so
have to accept it.
On it that it was like, that's the answer that everybody wanted to hear. They didn't think they were going to hear it from him. They didn't know. But that's what they want. That's how forward thinking he was. Like, I want to keep the parents allowing the kids, just like I'm talking about in the car. I want the parents to allow their kids to keep listening to my music. Therefore, if you come see me in person and I see a younger crowd in the audience, I can't be playing that song.
Yeah, it's really, really important, because when you have a band that, you know, let's say had an era that they either did well in or they kind of dominated, but they haven't been as dominant afterwards, like 6-7 years. What happens, like, when you go to, like, the rodeo and you see them perform, it's inevitable that they go back to their old songs because a lot of their new songs are not recognizable. Like, sure. A good example would have been Blink 182. Every one of their songs sounded like Blink 182. It sounded like, oh, yeah, this has this old Blink 182 feel that I really appreciated. But I didn't know 5, 10 of the newer songs, 20 of the newer songs. But when they played What's My Age Again, once they played some of their big hits, everybody was louder. Everybody was. Now, you had hardcores that knew even the newer Blink 182 songs, but there was a lot of them that was just waiting on those big hits. And that's the problem that you see. And it's really impressive that Prince could take that route. And considering the era, because you're talking about two completely different eras between Blink 182 and Prince, obviously. But yeah.
And I think the other great story, Nick, is the fact that, again, because he was kind of small, because he wore heels, that everybody thought that, just like the basketball stories, that he wasn't athletic and he wasn't tough or anything like that. But the Super Bowl halftime story is amazing, because if you remember, it was outdoors in Miami. And so the people for the NFL were losing their mind. They're like, halftime show with it raining, what are we going to do? And they were going to Prince going, hey, if you don't want to do this, we understand. If you want us to like cover the stage or do whatever. And he went, let it rain. And I hope it rains more. Because he knew it would be epic, especially because he's known as Purple Rain and all those other things. And the show is one of the most memorable and highly regarded halftime shows in the history of the Super Bowl. And it was all because he was like, I don't fear that. I'm going for it.
You got to appreciate that. You got to appreciate his talent, his confidence. Like you said, the way he was able to foresee things in the future before most.
So there's in this song, about 3/4 of the way in, after one of the choruses, there is a riff where it finishes with him going, yeah, yeah. Anytime, at any place, even if she's in mid-conversation, if this song is on, at that point, Taylor will stop what she's doing and yell, yeah, yeah, just like that. That's what dad and daughters do when they're listening in the car. So, yeah. R.I.P. Prince. And why I've known this my whole life, and I should just wait. But it's Prince Albert. I got to remember his full name again. But I normally know it. Now I can't remember it. But yeah, 5 years ago today, Prince passed away. I would like to tour Paisley Park someday in Minneapolis, by the way. It's now, his house has been turned into a museum.
I would totally go to that.
So that would be cool. It's kind of like
totally
Elvis at Graceland. All right, we're rolling through the first hour
Prince
of the program.
Rogers Nelson.
Prince Rogers Nelson. That's exactly right. All right. So rest in peace, Prince. And we'll have more of the show coming up right after this on the Press Box ESPN.
ESPN 97.5. You're listening to the Press Box on ESPN 97.5.
And on ESPN 92.5.
Powered by Infuse Energy, affordable, hassle-free energy from a company that has your back. Live from the Veritex Community Bank Studios, here's Joel Blank and Nick Sciarra.
All right. Since we've already had great dialogue and discussion in the first hour of the program, here's some updates for you. Okay? In regards to the Floyd family and the Raiders tweet. George Floyd's brother supports the Raiders tweet. He sees it the way of Mark Davis, as he has said it, and has said, on behalf of our family, I would like to extend our deepest gratitude to the Las Vegas Raiders organization and its leadership for their support of our family and for our nation's ongoing pursuit of justice and equality for all.
Well, that removes him from any controversy. I mean, if they endorse it, then I feel like it's done.
I think you're right.
It's all done.
Yep.
There should be...
Worth discussing because so many people had reaction to it. That's what we do here. Whether you have a problem with it or not is on you. But there you go. So there's that one.
Now, the Pelosi comment, that was dumb. That was super dumb.
Stupidity. And you're... There's no way to justify it.
No. But look, I didn't even know she was 81 years old. I didn't even know she was in her 80s.
I didn't have to know that to know she's not exactly got a fastball anymore in terms of trying to stay quick on everything.
I'm glad Dell and I were agreeing on this because I always get called the ageist. He's like, no, I'm ageist. I don't know if I need you speaking if that's the case. This is a very sensitive time.
Right.
You know what I mean? And I'm sure she had good intentions.
She had certain intentions regardless, right? All right. So then on another front, because of my rant on the Astros and how it pertained to Miles Straw, another name that I have brought up in the past on multiple occasions was one D. Gordon. And just like Jackie Bradley Jr. before him, you can take D. Gordon off your list of potential signings for the Astros that would cost you nothing more than whatever his contract would be. Because once again, the same team has done it again. The Milwaukee Brewers have signed D. Gordon to a minor league contract. So they are doing what I wish James Click would be doing right now, which is scouring every possible option to find other options than Miles Straw as your starting center fielder.
He just might be kind of neutered from money restraints from Crane. Crane might be telling Click, look, bro.
He signed a minor league contract. Nick, D. Gordon ain't going to cost you anything.
Good point. What am I going to say? I don't know what the thought process is. And honestly, Click hasn't been here long enough for me to really understand his real thought process, to be honest with you. At least with Luhnow, you kind of trusted what he was doing, you know.
You expected
him to make the right move almost, you know.
I think you're right in the fact that the outside circumstance is what are the finances at dealing with the pandemic and the lack of fans in the stands and the lack of revenue streams. That's something that we don't know, only they do. But maybe that is handcuffing them in terms of how aggressive they are. We know it affected the Correa negotiations because Correa said they won't do long-term at big money right now. I don't know if that will change.
And I'm not sure what we could have learned from even if there wasn't a pandemic and how James Click would be that guy, you know, because we don't know what their relationship is. And I don't know how Crane just, you know, what he says to Click when he makes these roster changes. So, I don't know. I there's options. There's ways to be cheap. I think there's a lot of players available that you can still be on the cheap and still make a roster.
Sure.
We were talking about the catching situation. Dell was giving his thoughts on Maldonado, saying, "Look, you can find other guys on the cheap if money is your issue." But you know, to each their own, I guess. But
look, I think that ideally, Nick, especially as we get later into his career in the next couple of years, Maldonado could be your backup catcher, could be your defensive replacement, could be your guy that's there, just like Mariznick used to be in the outfield.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. But for now, he's your best option behind the plate. And because it's a young pitching staff and it's a lot of international players and for a lot of other reasons, and he's a good defensive catcher, he's your starter right now. You could go get yourself another frontline catcher if you want, or a more offensive production like at the plate catcher. and still find a place for Maldonado. He's not expensive. He's well-loved in the clubhouse. There's a lot of reasons why you want him around. Jason Castro's not exactly a spring chicken. He's not going to be around for the long term. And so I think Maldonado makes perfect sense, and it still leaves you the open option of upgrading that position at some point if you want. But they've got bigger fish to fry because the bullpen's a mess and center field is a joke.
Agreed on that part, for sure. They have bigger fish to fry, no question. The bullpen is an absolute mess, and there's probably more priority in that, obviously, than other places. At least if I was the GM, I would definitely be making that.
Well, let me ask you, what is the bigger priority? Finding a full-time outfielder or getting some arms for the pen?
You think the fielding has been a bigger issue than the hitting? Can't you just blame the hitting issues on the vaccine, the COVID situation? I mean, how much blame are you putting on the defense versus...
Here's what I told you earlier in the show. I don't like the last three spots in the lineup. I don't like the fact that it's almost like playing in the National League. Like, Miles Straw and whoever's catching is the equivalent of the pitcher hitting in the Astros lineup. And so I need to rectify that some way, somehow. So I do understand what you're saying about the pandemic for the offensive lineup, and getting those guys back helps. When Altuve comes back and he's in leadoff, he proved like he was going to be a great leadoff hitter. Those are good things. But the bottom of the order has to be addressed. The outfield and center field has to be addressed, because Straw hasn't played good defense either. And they need a legitimate, experienced, major league outfielder out there. Because let's be honest, a guy that's always been in my crosshairs that people tried to hammer me because of his late season push last year on is once again doing exactly what I said is the reason why he's pissed me off. Kyle Tucker is doing nothing.
Yeah, he hasn't been on point. I mean, even yesterday, the thing about, I mean, for me, I would go with the bullpen if I had to choose, only because you would hope, I think it to a certain extent, you have to hope that somebody that they call up or somebody that hasn't been doing well like a Kyle Tucker is eventually going to turn things around. You would hope that they find some sort of consistency. And I feel a little bit more better. I feel better about Kyle Tucker than I do on Miles Straw. I'm not sure if you continue to keep Miles Straw in that lineup, if he's ever going to turn things around from an offensive standpoint. So if it was up to me, I would address the bullpen before getting that. That's just me personally. Mm-hmm. I would like to trust in the lineup and hope they can turn things around, because everything that tells me the front office is thinking is that they're not really spending money on hitters just yet. Just yet. They're not spending it.
Let us know what you think. What are you fixing first? Are you adding an arm or two to the bullpen, or are you trying to replace Miles Straw in the outfield? Because to me, I'm going to replace Miles Straw in the outfield and find an outfielder, because you know why, Nick? The starters are going to give you more innings as they get stretched out. The starters are going to get healthier when you get Fromber back, when you get Javier back in the rotation, when you figure out Lance McCullers post-second shot or post-COVID shot, if he returns health-wise. Now you're going to have a luxury of getting deeper into games and throwing more pitches. Therefore, you minimalize how many arms you need in the bullpen. You still need some veteran help. Joe Smith has been a dumpster fire.
That's your boy right there.
Yeah. Brooks Raley is not good.
That's your other boy.
Yeah, those two right now are exhibits A and B on the Joel Hate list. And Kyle Tucker's getting back where he belongs.
I think there's still a chance with Kyle Tucker, man. I'm not
giving up on him. I'm giving up on Miles Straw. Miles Straw should be the starting center fielder for the Sugarland Skeeters, or he should be your backup outfielder / pinch runner / utility guy. Something like that, like the roles he's played in the past.
Well, he listens to the show, so he hears you, by the way.
Well, good. Guess what? He's also not in the lineup today because he's listening to the doctors that said, you shouldn't have played last night either, Dusty.
Better pump your new brakes, pal.
I will. But what I'm telling you is I want to hear from the peeps. Do you want what would you want first? Is James Click supposed to be finding you help in the bullpen, or is he supposed to be finding us a outfielder that can play on a daily basis in center field and get Miles Straw back where he belongs? That's what we'll start hour number two with as we continue to push on. Before we get to the top of the hour break, I want to tell you about New Breaks, because New Breaks is where it's at, peeps, because they come to you and they do exactly what they say they're going to do. Brakes, it's all they work on. It's all they're focused on. Their technicians are brakes experts. They're not going to ask you if you want an oil change. They're not going to tell you about the fact that you need new axles or something else that needs to be done to your car. They're going to be focused on your brakes. They're going to come to you to make it convenient, and they're going to do what they do. That means they're going to use competitive prices, the same products, and do phenomenal work while you multitask. whether you're at work and they come to your parking garage, they can fix your brakes there. Whether you're at the house and they come to your driveway or your garage, and while they're fixing it, you're watching a ball game or cutting the lawn or doing whatever you need to do around the house. It's multitasking. It's convenience. It's just like at the grocery store. Instead of going shopping, you do curbside pickup or they come to you. Do the same thing with your brakes. Go to nubrakes.com and see what I mean. You mentioned ESPN 97.5. Save 10% right off the top. And then see what kind of great work that they could do. Instead of sitting in some brake shop's waiting room with uncomfortable chairs, bad television, and cold coffee, you're going to have them come to you and do it while you do other things and you're in the comfort of your own home or working at your job. It's great, great, great concept, and it's phenomenal in terms of the product and the service and the people that do the work. NUBrakes.com. Check them out today. NUBrakes.com.
Warning. You're listening to ESPN 97.5.